listening to All Things Cage at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, director of the John Cage Trust, and my guest today is Ken Tabachnik, who has had a long and diverse career in and around the arts. Ken is currently the executive director of the Merce Cunningham Trust, where he oversees all operations and long-term planning. Prior to that, he worked as a consultant on strategic planning and other organizational matters, independently and as a senior associate at AEA Consulting. From 2013 to 2016, he was deputy dean at the Tisch School of the Arts, NYU, and prior to joining Tisch, he was the first dean of the School of the Arts at Purchase College. Before joining academia, Ken was the general manager for New York City Ballet, where, in addition to overseeing administrative aspects of operations, he supervised the renovation of the David H. Koch Theater. Ken began his career as a lighting designer, working with clients such as the Bolshoi Ballet, Kirov Ballet, Paris Opera Ballet, Martha Graham Dance Company, Trisha Brown Company, Live from Lincoln Center, Robert Wilson, Susan Marshall, and Carol Armitage, among others. He was awarded a BESIE Award for Excellence in Lighting Design for his work with Stephen Petronio, with whom he has collaborated for more than 30 years. Ken earned his JD from Fordham Law School in 1996. From 1997 to 2004, he maintained a solo practice in New York City and also served as general counsel for Rising Tide Studios. I might also add that Ken is a very nice man who works beautifully with others, and that includes the motley crew that comprises the Board of Trustees for the Merce Cunningham Trust, on which I have served since its inception in 2009. So welcome to All Things Cage, Ken. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here, Laura. Thank you for inviting me. I just wish that we were doing this in person. That would really be the best, but it's great to be able to do this.
We'll have other opportunities, I'm sure of it.
I look forward to them.
Me too. We're in the middle of an ice storm here, and I think you're feeling the buds of spring in New York City. So it's quite bizarre to be so close to each other and have the weather fronts be so different.
It is. I gather it's all the same storm, and here the temperature is going down, and it's supposed to be 20 degrees tonight after being 55 this morning.
Ew. It was 7 when I woke up this morning.
Oh, my God.
Every little leaf on every little branch is wrapped in ice.
Oh, gorgeous. Beautiful.
It is. No, it is. They look like little tubes that are wrapped around the little ends of branches, which keep falling off,
right. Well, spring will be here soon.
Not soon enough.
Never soon enough, right?
If I could move the Cage Trust to Captiva, I would.
Oh, that would be beautiful, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? Don't you want to? Let's go. We just moved the whole operation.
I'm ready. I was there once, and it was just gorgeous, and it was so supportive, and what a great place.
It's a beautiful, really beautiful place. I can't even imagine how lovely it would be to work there.
It's true. I once saw, when I was in Los Angeles, it was an exhibition of Bob's, because, Captiva obviously was Bob's hideaway and workspace.
Of course.
And there was, in Los Angeles, a Rauschenberg exhibition, and it was the first time outside of Captiva that they had showed the entire mile-long artwork, and it just wound its way around the galleries, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, God, it must have been so beautiful outdoors in Captiva to see that work.
Did you see it at Jay Dellinger's gallery? Was that where you were?
No, I saw it at LACMA.
Oh, at LACMA in Los Angeles.
Yeah, at LACMA, in Los Angeles. And it was the same time that Charlie Atlas had his installation of Merce Cunningham films. Uh-huh. That had been at the Walker and a number of other places. Yeah. So
I remember
really
this
great.
Now. I remember I wasn't there, but I remember when you went.
Yeah.
We were jealous.
Well, it's good to have things that your friends do to be jealous about. We share them with each other, and hopefully we get to do them together sometimes. You and I have done them together.
We have. No, we have. We've been to Europe a couple of times together, to France. Yeah. We've walked a lot to France. Well, maybe those days will return.
Yeah, I hope so. Listen, there's so much for the Cage and Cunningham, trusts and organizations to be together about. So we keep doing it where we can.
I have done an introduction of you so the audience knows who you are, but I realized that we didn't talk about when you joined. You were not the first executive director of the Cunningham Trust. You were the second director, the first being Lynn Wickern, who, people who don't know, was the finance director at the Cunningham Foundation. So that when it closed, and when Merce died and the foundation closed and the trust opened, began operations, Lynn expressed the desire to be the director, and we didn't have one. So in she came, and that lasted a few years. So when did you come?
I came in Thanksgiving 2016. It might have been 2017. I would have to look. My memory these days is just gone.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I think it's 2017, actually, now that I think about it. That means that Lynn was the director of the Cunningham Trust for 7 years?
Yeah.
Or eight years. That's amazing. Yeah,
that's right.
Actually, when I think about it.
But amazing things happened during that time. You know, the trust grew from an initial organization that was trying to get a little bit of work done and not sure where it would end up and what would happen and how much interest there would be in the legacy after Merce died. And by the time I came, there was a robust licensing program and daily classes and regular workshops, and people knew about it. And there was a lot of growth. It was great.
It's true. It's true. And when you came, as I recall, that was simultaneous with our expanding the board.
Yes, that's right. Two new trustees joined at that time.
I think it was more than
three. Three new. It was three new.
That's
sorry.
Right. Yeah. It was, yes, Lori Getford and Jeff Saroy.
Yep.
And
Rashawn Mitchell.
Rashawn Mitchell. That's exactly right. And since then, we've added two or three more.
Two additional since, and we've lost one along the way.
Oh, that's right. Trevor stepped down.
It was great to have, I have to say, for me, when I started, it was great to have Trevor, having been the executive director of the Cunningham Foundation and having been so close with Merce and with you. It really, you know, helped me very quickly get up to speed to have you and Trevor there, especially you and Trevor. I mean, the other trustees also were helpful, but you and Trevor in particular really made it a good transition for me.
For our listening audience, when the trust was formed, which was prior to Merce's death, actually, but it was triggered to become operational when Merce died, the trustees, we only had four trustees, all of whom had been named by Merce. Interestingly, not Trevor, even though Trevor and Merce were super close. And the only way that we really understand that is that Merce was being kind. he thought Merce, that Trevor had done his duty with all these different roles at Cunningham. But I really wanted him there. You know, I wanted him there because the trustees were, I'm trying to think now who it was, me, obviously, but Robert Swinston and Patricia Lent, both of whom were dancers with Cunningham. Yeah. And there was one other. Who was the other?
Alan Sperling.
Oh, of course, Alan Sperling, who was the lawyer who served on Cunningham's foundation forever. But he is also significantly the lawyer who put together the John Cage Trust when Cage died.
Yeah.
So he was our formative guy.
Yeah.
But then we expanded it to have more of a variety of people, frankly, people who covered other dance than Cunningham, people who came from the writing world. That was Jeff Saroy. Lori Getford came from Rauschenberg, so he came from the art world. I think we're in a very lovely place now. I think, you know, we have a lot of different kinds of people.
Yeah, I agree. And the most recent additions, Georgiana Pickett, who was the executive director at Christian Arts Center, and Shayla B. Jenkins, who is a dancer and a teacher and a choreographer. And there's a really nice diversity of voices, of ages, of genders, and experiences that are really able to help inform the direction of the trust.
It's absolutely true.
You know, and most importantly, keep me in line.
Yes. No. As I said, you play very nicely with other people.
Thank you.
You know, when you came, I sort of, with Lynn, it was a little different because Lynn was really, she had her hands full just creating the trust. You know what I mean? Creating the mechanism of the trust. So I didn't really have time to kind of speculate. But I remember when you came in, I was somewhat envious of the fact that you had walked into an organization that Merce had everything to do with. Whereas when we started the John Cage Trust, John Cage simply left everything to MERS. And so literally we had to figure out what a trust would be, what it would look like. So that took us years, you know, when we finally made the trust, well, 2 years actually. And then MERS had benefit of the Cage Trust to form his own ideas about what a trust would be for him. So I just felt like you had a step up from what I had going in. Yeah. I just felt we could make up everything.
I think that's exactly right, because John Cage died in 92, I think.
Yep.
So that means that trust was formed in 94. So MERS died in 2009. So he had almost 20 years.
That's exactly right.
Of experience, you know, seeing how it goes and watching what the John Cage Trust did. And you were involved, obviously, in the John Cage Trust, and Alan was involved in starting it, as you said. So there was, you know, a good amount of knowledge collection and knowledge building and experience that really has benefited, obviously. I think, obviously, maybe it's not so clear, but has benefited the Merce Cunningham Trust, and therefore it benefited me in my position. And I feel very lucky to have come in that position, actually.
I mean, there's something to be said for both sides of the fence, you know, of walking into something where there are no rules. I mean, there are rules, of course, legal rules for the trust, but in terms of guidance, we were making things up from the get-go.
Sure.
And MERS, talk about MERS, he was a president of our board. So he was really, really important. We had MERS, we had Ann Darnincourt from Philadelphia Museum, David Vaughn, and me. So there were four of us. Good. Life was good.
Life is still good.
Of course. It's just different.
Just different. That's true. Yeah. But one of the things also that I think, you know, helped inform everybody's thinking about these things, or at least in the dance field, and I assume also in the music area, which, you know, can be quite different, though in times they are very similar. But what happened with the Martha Graham Trust and Foundation really was informative to what happens when you don't take care of things in the right way.
And MERS gave a lot of thought to that. That affected him a lot.
I bet it did.
In part because he was a former dancer of Martha Graham, but mostly he just didn't want that to happen to him.
Yeah.
And his dancers and the company and all of the people who had served him in one way or another. He just didn't want this to collapse. And it didn't.
No. It's thriving, in fact.
We're still here.
It is thriving, I have to say.
I know, you know, I've been doing this now I have my 30th anniversary.
Oh my gosh, wow. Yeah. God bless you, that is great. Wonderful. And
that's not counting the years I spent with Cage before he died. So really, we're talking 35, 36 years.
Wow, fabulous.
It's scary.
It's great. Well, look at all you've seen. Well, scary, you know. It goes by in a flash, right? You know, that's the way
that's
our lives
scary
are.
Part. That's the scary part.
That's the scary part.
Yeah. Is that, you know, I remember 30 years ago with the Cage Trust like it was yesterday.
Yeah, but just to digress a little bit, because I'm always fascinated by this, you know, I'm very aware that having reached the stage that I have reached, looking back, time looks and feels very different to me than it did 30 years ago.
Of course.
And it certainly feels, even if it's not true, and I guess we'd have to call up Einstein and ask him about this, but it certainly feels like it's accelerating at a very fast pace. And that's worrisome.
I think it has, anyway. On to you. So what brought you to Cunningham? How did you come to us?
Well, it was very fortuitous, actually. I have, you know, my career has been very nonlinear. And, you know, I've always looked for interesting things to do. And at the time, 2015-16, I had left NYU Tisch, where I had been deputy dean, and I had been doing consulting, both freelance and with a very boutique-y kind of strategic planning firm, and had been doing a lot of writing. And somebody called me and said, this position has opened up. Can you recommend anyone? This was a headhunter, a search firm, where I knew the person, you know, through the many years of being in the field together. And she had asked me for recommendations, as so often happens. And I said, what is it? And she told me what it was and told me about the job. And I said, gee, that's really interesting. I think I might be interested in that, because it brought together for me my legal background, my interest in rights and arts management, my experience running dance companies and being involved with dance and other artistic organizations, My interest in legacy and where the field was going at the time from a strategic point of view. And so I said to the headhunter, do you think I can put in an application? And she said, well, send me your resume. So I sent her my resume and she like called me like that, like instantly. She called back and she said, you're like a dream candidate. You should definitely apply for this.
Right.
So I did, you know, and that was from there. It just rolled forward, you know, and right, here right. I am five years later.
It feels like yesterday that you first
I know.
Came in. It really does.
It does.
Do you have a favorite part of the job, Ken? What do you like best about it?
My favorite part of the job, believe it or not, it seems so silly, is going to see our licensees performing the work. I mean, there's nothing better, right, than seeing it come to fruition. That's one aspect of my favorite part. And this was really, I was very focused on this during the centennial, is the sort of strategic, the integration of strategy with operations. And so in the centennial, we were able as a group to kind of set a theme and set a tone for what we wanted the centennial to be. And a lot of it had the underpinnings of, you know, where I thought and where all of us thought the organization should go into the future. And Trevor, who was the producer of the centennial and worked very closely with me, he and I talked about that all the time, you know, about this program and how does it fit, or this idea and how does it fit, and do we have the resources? And so we were very lucky to be able to try a lot of things. The trustees were incredibly supportive during that period. But that, you know, laying out a strategic idea and direction and then actually having the ability to carry it out or to try it and see if it works mm-hmm. is another really big favorite part of my job. So mm-hmm. those two things are really what I love about this job.
You reminded me when you said that you like to go see the work. You like to see the work being performed by the licensees. Yeah. And I remember giving a little talk at Baryshnikov on the heels of having worked on the 2012 centennial event by Michael Tilson Thomas and New World Symphony. I found myself saying, and I realized how wonderful it was, is that normally I'm, as you say, I'm a visitor. I go to the event and I am in the audience and I'm just a groupie. I go and I support. But with the Michael Tilson Thomas event, that week long, I got to like watch it get put together. And then I got to sit back and watch it. It was thrilling. It was absolutely thrilling. It was just lovely.
Yeah, it sounded great.
Lovely. But it was just so fun to be part of creation of something, to watch it, be so close up watching it.
Well, you must have had a similar experience then in the music circus during the centennial.
Totally. Whenever I do an event, of course, you know, when I do anything like that, staged event, it's thrilling. But to watch other people, how they go about it and be the person who just gets to sit there and be available for questions. Right.
Well, and what a great place to do with Michael Tilson Thomas and the New World Symphony. What a great group.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. Wonderful. It was that particular event, that whole week-long festival was my favorite. I think my very favorite centennial event.
Yeah.
Second was our president here, Leon Botstein, did a beautiful concert at Carnegie with the American Symphony Orchestra. I loved the concert. I just thought it was so brave. He played things that I helped him put a program together, and he didn't shy away from anything that was difficult. And he even picked up a violin at one point and played with the orchestra.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how great.
It was great. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds fabulous. Yeah. He's an interesting person. You know, it's obvious that I had more contact with him.
Yeah. Anytime you want to come up and, have a conversation about Cage Cunningham here, I've been trying to make that happen for a long time.
We'll look for a date.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
I'm going to be writing him, so maybe I'll mention that to him. So, have you never met?
I've met him once. I used to be a member at the Century Club.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to have monthly, they would have artist lunches where somebody would come and talk or present. And he came one time and he gave a talk, maybe came more than once, but I attended once where he gave a fascinating talk about, it was billed as technology and music. And what he talked about was the impact of the piano on as a technological innovation and how it revolutionized both how audiences approach music and how musicians approach music, because it fixed the tuning, which meant that musician, you know, being a good musician became a very different activity. Not that you don't need some of the same things, but his point was you could now just have a physical mastery to become an extremely talented performer on an instrument where you needed something additional before, which was to have an ear at the same time. It was fascinating. So I met him there, but that's the, you know, and we chatted a little bit, but he wouldn't remember me.
He's a brilliant speaker. He can speak, he just as a natural presentational style of the way that he talks.
Right.
Anyway, so I guess it's quid pro quo, or in fairness to the conversation, what are the parts of your job you don't like? Are there parts of the job you don't like?
You know, some of the mundane daily, I have to say, we're in the middle of our audit right now, and I've just spent my entire morning dealing with allocation of functional expenses and looking through every budget line to allocate it. I can't say I like that very much.
I don't like anything having to do with numbers myself. So tax time makes me miserable.
Yeah.
Even payroll taxes bother me.
Yeah, that's really the one big thing, let's say.
Me too. But, you know, not a day goes by really, and I dare say that you'll agree, you know, that I don't feel absolutely blessed.
Absolutely.
To have the job that I do, and to have the privilege of doing it for so long. Yeah. I get to grow, and I get to continue to learn, and
No, I completely agree. And I tell people all the time how privileged I feel, how honored I feel to be able to help carry the legacy forward, to have this job, to have the support of the trustees, to have a great staff around, to, you know, the engagement that we have with the community and the field and the larger cultural ecology is fabulous. So there's nothing. That's why, you know, I look at what I pick to say I don't like about my job. You know, it's like one tiny portion of it, because so much of it is so great.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel much like you do.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I mean, I have a lot of friends who can't say that. So.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And also, you know, being at the point in my career that I am, it's a really nice way, or a really nice time to be able to feel this way about what I'm doing. You know, as I probably settle into what is going to be my last full-time job. It's really nice to be able to feel that, and to not feel, you know, like many people do when they get to this point that, oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone ever told you this. I would have if I had thought to tell you. But one of the loveliest things about you when you first came to find out about you is that you were a lawyer. And the reason that that was so lovely to learn was that prior to your coming, it was just Alan, who is obviously a lawyer, and he hated being the only lawyer. He hated it. He, of course, didn't put it in those terms, but he always felt like he was the person who was upholding the rules that he was, you know. And I don't think he liked that, because it cost him, in a day-to-day way, his friendships with all the trustees, with the other trustees. So when you came in, it was very helpful, because it allowed him to come back to us as a colleague. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do. No, nobody's ever told me that. And I suppose it was helped by the fact that I'm really kind of an apostate lawyer.
That's okay.
Reformed lawyer, but I still have it in me. Like my friends who are, you know, have given up faith and were pastors given up faith, and they still have the faith in them.
Yes.
Even though they don't practice. So.
Well, that's better than my Ralph, my partner, who says he's a recovering lawyer.
Yeah. Be careful. Going the other way.
It's true. So what's going on at the Trust right now? Is anything exciting going on? I know we're going to be listening to a piece of music. We wanted to pull something from, as we often do, from the program guest and really what we're talking about. And one of the things that Ken suggested, which I thought was perfect, is a Feldman piece, actually, not a Cage piece today. We'll listen to a Feldman piece called Ixion, which was a piece that was used for Cunningham's Summer Space, which is a very beautiful piece. We have a performance coming up of Summer Space.
Right now it's in license to New York City Ballet. It started being performed on their opening night this year, which was January 27th, and it runs through this weekend. And they will do it again at Saratoga Performing Arts Center this summer in their season. And Summer Space is a beautiful piece. The dancers look wonderful and fabulous. And the orchestra is playing the chamber music version of Ixion, which is not often
performed. Very special, right. People need to understand that, you know, if you're inclined to go, you should go, because you hear the chamber orchestra version of this piece, which is rarely performed.
Yeah, and they do it very well. It's gorgeous. It's really a very special experience. And of course, the Rauschenberg scenery and costumes. And yeah, anyone who can, either at Saratoga or at the David H. Koch Theater this weekend, get to see it. Highly recommended.
Yeah, it's a very lyrical piece, as I recall, right? Yeah. It's very dancerly. It's a dancerly work. And the music is also very lyrical, which is...
Yeah, and in many ways, it's very sparse. Mm-hmm. And it dates from 1958. So it is, 63 years ago? I can't do math very quickly anymore, but it looks just like it was done yesterday. It's fascinating.
Amazing.
I would tell them. Yeah, really gorgeous.
Wouldn't you agree, Kim? It's really one of the things that Merce and I used to talk about quite a bit, that there are certain artists, Cage, obviously one of them, Cunningham, obviously one of them, that their work is not dated.
Yeah.
When I see Cunningham work, it could have been made yesterday. When I hear Cage, I think somebody could have written this morning, and I would accept that.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I have a theory about that, actually. And, you know, my theory is that those artists whose work remains ever relevant are artists who had very deep understandings of sort of the classical forms that came before them. And out of that deep understanding, they're able to actually synthesize something new. Mm-hmm. And because of that connection to the deep history and the classics, you know, the traditional background, the work that they've created really does stand the test of time.
Right. That's certainly the case we learned with Cunningham. You know, watching Cunningham and the integration of balletic sort of technique into modern dance technique, using the strength of traditional classical dancers, you know, he was drawn to that, all of that.
His being rooted in tap dance as a young child, and, you know, having spent, years doing ballroom dancing, going up to Harlem and, you know, exposing himself to all of these and really, you know, as a movement artist trying to understand how do they work. I'm sure in his mind, he was taking them apart and dissecting them and integrating them. And it shows up in the work.
It's true. I used to tell people, I don't say it anymore because it's dated, but I used to say often that Merce Cunningham ruined modern dance for me, because once I saw his work, I literally could not watch other modern dancers, maybe with the exception of Pina Bausch, because it was so different from Cunningham and yet so vital.
Yeah.
But those two, and beyond that, I really had a hard time watching modern dance, you know, because it seems so untamed and so unstructured and so, you know, not classical.
Yeah. Well, one of the great things about it that I see, and I think has really stood the test of time, is that there's an incredible diversity within the Cunningham repertory. And much more so than what I've seen, without getting naming, but so often, you know, just like in the Cage repertory, you know, the diversity of what's there. And you can never think that it's in this narrow channel like you see with so many other people.
Right. You know, it's funny. I'm sorry, but you reminded me of something I used to say to people when they would criticize Cage to me. They would say, oh, God. His ideas are great, but God, I hate his music. And I would say all of it, because there's so many different kinds of music. There's got to be something in there that they like, you know?
Right. It's so true. And it's fascinating to me, you know, and watching the development of artists like Cage and Cunningham over the decades that they worked. It's really a joy, actually, to be able to dig into an artist's, you know, legacy like that and to watch that development.
Yeah. With Cage, it keeps my work interesting because still to this day, I learn things about pieces that I didn't even know existed. Right. You know, I've heard their name maybe, but, you know, I have cause because someone needs information about something. And so I pull it out and I look at it and I think, how did I never know this?
Right.
This is so interesting. You know, so, and the same, I suspect, is with Cunningham when you start seeing dance. But Ken, I want to give credit where credit's due. You know, part of my love of Cunningham's work is my love of Cunningham dancers.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, they're so beautiful and they're so disciplined and strong, you know?
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to watch them move.
Yeah, and something that, you know, now that I have much more contact on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, whatever it is, also to talk to them and to hear them talk about what they do and their work. It's very different than other dancers. Very
different. I agree.
Of course, I'm being crudely general about that, but so different the way they approach. And there's a certain, you know, a certain kind of intellectual rigor in a Cunningham dancer that goes along with the physical rigor.
I couldn't agree more.
It's fascinating. Fascinating talking about not only about what they do, but about anything with the Cunningham dancer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did some of the interviews for Charlie Atlas for his film. Yeah. And so I got to interview a lot of the dancers. Yeah. And I was blown away, absolutely blown away. I mean, I remember in particular Jeannie Steele.
Uh-huh.
She was so thoughtful and smart. Yeah. And, you know, she had been with Merce for so long. And I don't know, I was blown away, absolutely blown away.
Jeannie's great. She's in London now, and she is developing curriculum and running a higher education program and really devoted to teaching teachers how to teach dance.
Uh-huh. God, really so needed. So needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a minute left, believe it or not.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I can't believe it. See how time flies?
I know. It flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. Well, it's easy for us, you know, with these two legacies and how closely aligned they are and the history of them intertwined. It's so easy for us to always.
It's true.
Always
it's
have
true.
Connections.
And we can always talk again, you know, anytime something interesting is happening for that. There's always something interesting happening, but you know what I mean. When something kind of special happens.
That would be great.
And I'd love to have you up here. Maybe we look at April or May when the when the ice melts.
That would be great. Yeah, that's fine. I'm planning. I'm hoping, you know, if this pandemic ever releases travel, I'm hoping to get to Europe. There are actually Cunningham performances in Germany and Austria in late May, early June.
Nice.
I'm hoping to get there. I was hoping to get to Holland this coming week where their performance is, but it just doesn't make sense with the restrictions for American travelers yet.
Exactly. But, I heard something. I just was listening to NPR yesterday, I think it was, and they were saying that we might see relaxation almost back to 2019 in a matter of weeks.
That would not be great.
I know.
They've gone over the hump, and now we're thinking of it as, an endemic rather than pandemic?
We were probably listening to the same conversation.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure, Ken. It was a pleasure.
It's always great, Laura. I love our opportunities to chat and to see each other, and hopefully we'll have a trip together soon.
And a Christmas dinner maybe this year.
Oh, that would be lovely.
We used to do them with the Trust every year, but we haven't done them now for years.
Well, we haven't been able to for a couple of years.
Thanks
for having me. Always a pleasure. Good to see you. Enjoy the weekend.
And you. See you soon.
Okay. Cheers. Okay. Bye-bye.
Morton Feldman's Ixion from 1958. A work for chamber ensemble that also was performed in a two-piano version, was commissioned by Merce Cunningham for the dance Summer Space. What we'll listen to now is the rendition captured on the 10-CD box set released by New World Records in 2004, which features stellar performers performing works that span some 57 years, here played by John Cage and David Tudor. As Northwestern University musicologist and historian Ryan Dohoney tells us in the introduction to his lovely piece entitled Spontaneity, Intimacy, and Friendship in Morton Feldman's Music of the 1950s, Feldman became a full-time composer at the age of 40. He had worked in the family business, a children's coat factory near LaGuardia Airport in New York City, since his early 20s, and had been disparaged by Pierre Boulez as a dilettante because of it. In the spring of 1966, Feldman told Cage that the business, quote, went kaput, and now I'm blessed with total insecurity. His insecurity was hardly total. Through a chance meeting that year following a performance of Cunningham's Summer Space, accompanied by Feldman's Graff piece, Ixion, Feldman established a long-lasting patronage relationship with Dominique de Menil. Awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship as well, Feldman lectured in the UK, where his music was recorded and broadcast on BBC Radio 3. He also extended his avant-garde network within the United States, strengthening ties with musicians in California. Feldman at last seemed to be receiving public recognition. Yet in a lecture given in early 1967 at Mercedes Matters' New York Studio School, Feldman seemed to long for the past, casting a backward glance over his dissolving artistic community. "When one begins to work," he began, "until that unlucky time when it is no longer involved with just a few friends, admirers, complainers, there is no separation between what you do and what you are. I don't mean that you hope that what you are doing is real or right. That is not the question. You work. The work leads to a concept of music that draws attention. You soon find yourself in the world, maybe not for the right reason, but you find yourself in the world. Yet there was that other world of conversation, of anonymity, of seeing the paintings in the intimacy of the studio and not in a museum, of playing a new work on the piano in your home and not in the concert hall, of the hours spent walking, eating, and talking with John Cage, and not wondering if I should fly to Paris from London in order to spend a few hours with him in arrogant crowds of people. Nothing lasts." For more of Feldman's eloquence and more memories of the period, I highly recommend two books. Feldman's own Give My Regards to 8th Street, republished by Exact Change in 2004, as well as the John Cage and Morton Feldman Radio Happenings, 5 unscripted radio conversations between Cage and Feldman that were aired over WBAI in New York City, July 1966 to January 1967. These were published in both English and German in 2016 in a collaborative effort by Musiktexte and Mode Records in a volume that also contains a CD of the conversations. Cunningham's Summer Space is indicative of the choreographer's unique collaborative method, in which Feldman composed the score, Robert Rauschenberg designed the decor, costumes, and lighting, and Cunningham choreographed independently from the others. Together, the movement, music, and decor give the effect of a balmy summer day. Dressed in painted leotards, the dancers move about the stage in sudden bursts of speed and suspensions, zigzagging every which way like flying creatures. The delicate music, Ixion, somehow evocative of nearly every work Feldman ever composed, at times sounds like bubbles of water rising to the surface, and at others, with a muffled rumble in the bass, like distant thunder. The work premiered at the American Dance Festival at Connecticut College in New London on August 17, 1958. The original cast consisted of Carolyn Brown, Remy Charlotte, Merce Cunningham, Viola Farber, Cynthia Stone, and Marilyn Wood. Summer Space has been restaged by the New York City Ballet and can be seen during the company's summer residency at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center on July 12 through 16, 2022.
Thank you. The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.